Quality of leads for conversion into prospective clients is very important. How can you position your web agency that attracts high quality leads, which further converts into better priced service offerings? Improving your agency positioning for better clients and better prices, here is Corey Dodd sharing it all. So let's welcome Corey on the show and get started.
Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started.
Hi, Corey. How are you?
I'm great, Davinder. How about yourself?
I am doing good. So it's like a different time for me to record. It's like early morning. So it's kind of a refreshing change for me. So.
Hopefully that's good. Not too early.
Yeah, no, it's like 11 a.m. So that's fine. So before we get on with the process, hidden secrets of getting, you know, better clients who eat less of your brain power, why don't a quick introduction about your online life, like what you've been doing in this online world for the last 5, 10, 20, 30, whatever.
Sure. Well, my name's Corey Dodd, and I run a small agency just outside of Melbourne, so in a town called Geelong, which is down the coast. I think we were just having a chat about that before.
Yeah.
And I've been running, so Elk Creative has existed in some form or another for probably over 10 years. And in that time, a couple of times I've gone back and worked for other agencies. But this sort of time around, I've sort of, you know, changed the way that I do everything, and we'll sort of touch on some of that stuff. But yeah, my background, I've been in the industry for 20 years, and I, you know, studied and then went to, you know, study design after high school, and then went into, you know, designing in within the web industry. The web industry was super new 20 years ago, and it wasn't like anything like what it was now. But yeah, my role's always been that creative sort of role in within digital space, and sort of later and later I've moved more towards branding, and I, you know, I consider a website a part of, you know, a brand and a brand strategy. So, you know, we still do a lot of web development here, but the sort of focus is, you know, brand, and that's, you know, obviously visual identities and that sort of stuff, but also helping people understand, you know, who their ideal customer is, what their messaging should be, and how they should communicate that message as a part of that overall brand.
So I believe now you don't work with other agencies, just your own thing, right?
No, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I've done the, that's what, you know, when I said I've had Elk Creative as one sort of form as or another, if you go back like, you know, 5 years ago, or further, yeah, I was doing a lot of that sort of direct, to agency stuff, white label work and all that sort of stuff. And then I went and worked for, you know, a couple of large agencies. I've worked for one. That's what moved, you know, made me move to the location I'm at now. I worked for a large agency here and did that for a few years. And then, you know, just got to the point where, you know, I was in a senior role and there was sort of nowhere else to go and nothing else to do and nothing that was challenging. And I mean, I learned a lot working in that business. You know, I was in, you know, the admin team and that sort of stuff. So I really got to see how they actually, you know, run the actual whole business. And it was just like, yeah, I'm going to go back and work for myself again and sort of try and set it up like an agency. So it's still fairly early. It's probably been, I don't know, 18 months, a couple of years maybe, that I've sort of gone back and sort of reinvented, you know, Elk Creative and sort of done it full time again. But it's been going really well. So yeah.
Awesome. Now, getting quality leads is very important for conversion into quality clients. Like input has to be good so that your output is good. Now, what has been your journey with regard to building quality leads from the time you started your agency as an independent person to maybe today?
Yeah, sure. That's a big question. But I think the first thing to do is, you know, and I mean, we might touch on niching because that's, you can't really sort of talk about how to position something without at least sort of bringing that up. But I think the first thing was sort of trying to understand who that ideal customer is for me. So, you know, I saw how important that was at other places, and sort of having, I worked at places that have had like really strict vertical niches and horizontal niches. And I think there's ways of sort of having a, an ideal client without creating a niche. But what that is sort of really trying to work out, I guess there's three things that you want to consider. And there's the things, you know, you often hear people like, do what you love, you know, you love, and you'll never work a day in your life, which I think is rubbish, right? Because
passive income, nothing is passive. You got to be active.
But the whole thing with that sort of stuff too is once you're doing something that you love and it's work, it can sort of detract from that. So I think it's about something that you enjoy and can persevere doing, you know, for a long time. But there's finding that thing that you enjoy, and then there's the finding that thing that you're good at. So there's no point, you know, trying to sell something that you enjoy but you're not good at. But then within that thing, the third sort of missing piece is to try and understand who values the thing that you do well and you enjoy. So if you get all of those three pieces to overlap in that middle, you know, the people who value and are willing to spend the most money on that service that you have, that's really your sweet spot. So I was really trying to find out who that ideal customer for me was. And that was just looking at, you know, I was obviously going to be design and web services. That's all I've ever done. But it was really trying to look back over the past and see, you know, what sort of people that I had the best sort of projects with, and what projects went easy and what projects were profitable. Because when they're easy and you're motivated and you get them done, generally the outcome is better, and the outcome is faster, and the outcome, you know, everything goes smoother. So I was trying to find some of those things, and it's changed. But initially it was sort of working with like marketing managers for sort of, you know, a lot of these large hospitality chains and that sort of stuff. And I've sort of moved into a different direction organically. So we've started to niche, which again we'll have a chat about. But that was that first thing. I was really sort of trying to understand who that customer was, you know, who they are. Even when, as far as doing like proper avatars, like a client avatar, so a worksheet, like this is, you know, what this person looks like, give them a name, try and, you know, explain the sort of things that they enjoy, where they spend their time. And once you've got that, you really know, you know, who you're trying to talk to, and then you direct your messaging towards that person. So yeah, that's really the first step to try and understand your customer.
And what is your niche as of today? Like, what kind of businesses you serve?
Yeah, so that's sort of happened organically, and that's sort of, I guess, the stuff that has been happening, you know, coming to the business and that we've been sort of being able to produce and find that's really profitable. And that's largely like a property development. So that's people that are doing buying blocks of land that fit 500 homes on them and getting investors and divvying them up into 500 homes. And then, we're doing like the branding for that. And then, you know, you're doing like the office fit out and all the flyers and the, you know, all the stuff that goes on the real estate websites and some social stuff and the websites. So those projects are, some people might think that sounds really dry, but they're really, for me, they're really the projects that I do enjoy. There's a lot of design in them. They're a lot about lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really, they understand, these real estate people, well, property development. It's not real estate as in selling, you know, single homes. It's this sort of land development stuff. And they realize that, yeah, brand is really sort of strong in this, because all people are coming to see is that, you know, all they're getting is a block of land to build a home on, but it's much, much more than that. You're selling them a dream for the rest of their life, or, you know, for the next stage of their life. So brand becomes really strong. So you have these conversations and develop like a really strong identity around that stuff. So it's got a lot of stuff in there.
Before you naturally transitioned into this niche of, you know, property developers who work on a bigger scale, like buy a big chunk of land and, you know, build houses and all that stuff, what was your niche before this? Or you were just being, you know, generic and trying to find, or, you know, isolate, or you zero in on certain niche that happened naturally for you?
Yeah. So like before, like what I was saying, we worked out, look, there's probably a few areas, you know, there was like hospitality. We still do some stuff with hospitality. We still do some stuff with council, but it was trying to find those sorts of businesses that had like a marketing or communications team, but they don't really sort of do, they're not doing the branding, or they're not doing that sort of stuff. They kind of do document maintenance, and maybe they're doing flyers and brochures, but they're not doing the higher level design, and they're not doing the website builds. They're just sort of adding content. So it's trying to find those sorts of clients initially. And that led to more and more work in to just organically into this real estate, into the land development area and property development niche. So, yeah, initially it was quite broad, but it was a specific sort of type of person that we're trying to get the work from. And look, that's something that's really important to understand too, that when you're targeting a person, or you, even if you have a like a set niche, like we get work outside of those niches, but the goal is that we start to direct our, you know, conversation and the, you know, even when I'm networking, I'm more likely to go to a networking event that has those sorts of people at it rather than going to a general, you know, a general business networking event because there's all sorts of people at them. They're good. I still like to go to those things to show my face. But, you know, there's some sort of clients that I don't particularly like working with. I don't like tech startups and things like that. And, you know, but there's a lot of networking events for tech startups. So there's no point me going to that kind of event. So, yeah, I don't know. Does that answer the question a little bit?
Yeah, because, you know, it's not something like a person will wake up and decide, oh, I'm just going to serve hospitality people. And this is not how things happen. It's like a natural journey, just like you mentioned. So as of
yeah.
You're mostly concentrated on, you know, property developers who are working at a bigger level now. When you yep. get leads for this kind of a, you know, prospective client, how do you yep. qualify a specific lead in terms like, is it worth investing time on that specific lead for possible conversion? Like, do you have any process, or if you have, like, how has it changed so that you save more time on not investing on leads that would definitely not convert or would not interest you as a person or even as your agency owner?
Yep. So I guess if I look at a generic lead rather than say the specific of that niche, it's probably easier to sort of describe that. There's probably a few things that are qualifiers in that. And that's like, conversations around money and my process and how we work and that sort of stuff. If people don't like those things and we're not a good fit, look, I've got my own way of working, and then I think everyone else, you know, you're going to see different ways of working, different ways of onboarding. My process, you know, I do a lot of the onboarding stuff here, and my process is quite hands-on. Like I'm not the sort of person that goes and sends people to, online forms and things like that. I'd rather just have the conversation, and I can weed people out pretty quickly in a 20-minute conversation. Even 10 minutes in, you know, if that person's, you know, not a good fit for you, and you can sort of start to speed that conversation up to get to things like price. And if you drop the price where you think they should be sitting and they're not comfortable with it, that's all good. You know, you've only wasted 10, 15 minutes. So, yeah, I know a lot of people will use checklists or, you know, fill out forms online, and it's the same. It's for the same reason, you know, it's about having these sort of, I think the best way to describe them is barriers of entry. And normally they're considered a bad thing, right? You don't want to have barriers for entry to stop people. But really, if that helps filter out people that aren't good clients for you, that aren't good fits, then it generally, you know, helps. And if I go to the niche sort of stuff, like a lot of those people they're the same clients. Like, so I'll work with a property developer, and then, you know, a project will wrap up and they're like, well, we've got these two other ones starting. We'll get you on this one. And we'll bring that project in. And I think at the moment we've got four property projects on with one person and two with one developer and two with another. And they're at different stages, and, you know, they do take some time, unlike your normal sort of branding project where you're just doing a logo or a web project. So that it's a little bit tedious with that. They can sort of slow down and stuff. But yeah, I don't actually need to get a lot of those clients. It really is, you know, there's three that are sort of around, and if I can pick up one or two more, it would actually change everything because you're doing so many projects with these same people. And I guess with that niche idea, right? Like the thing with that is if you're niching, not just with, like an area, like an industry, you're trying to target, you know, something that you can produce the work for at the right level, you know, whether it's high end or low end. And I'll go off the track for a second, but I think a lot of people obviously focus on high end clients rather than low end, but you need to understand where's best for you, because you might be able to do, you know, cheap work really quickly and make it really profitable. If you can do something in, you know, what's better, a 100-hour project that, you know, it makes you $2,000 or a 1-hour project that makes you $500? Well, I'd rather do the one, you know, the 1-hour one that makes you a higher profit. So sometimes when people think, I want these expensive, you know, clients, you need to have the right sort of the work for them, you know, you need to have the right sort of process for them, that sort of stuff. So, as I was saying, like those referrals within that niche, then they're very similar sorts of people. They're, you know, like if one of my clients refers me on to a similar business, that they're going to be, you know, so similar. It's not like one is, you know, selling 500 homes and the next one selling 3 homes. They're all in the same sort of space. So, yeah, there's less qualification going on there. It's just, can we land that client?
Okay, on the, you know, positioning front, what specific things have you done on the agency level so that you only attract the higher quality leads, or at least majority of the leads that comes to you are higher quality and focus area?
Sure. So one of the things, I guess, around that quality, that's a word that I guess is a little bit tangible. You know, quality is subjective. Different for different people. Yeah, subjective, totally. And so I guess that's where you try and find that ideal person. If you can get that ideal thing right and you can work out, you know, specifically where you should be pricing and where you should be putting that sort of stuff, then it's trying to understand the way, you know, to communicate with that person. So it's starting to write content specifically for those people, produce content for those sorts of people, make sure your messaging is clearer towards those people. Networking, again, like I said, I'm more likely to go to a networking event that's related to property developers than I am to tech startups. So it's those sorts of things. Case studies is really big. I found that really important. So, and initially that was the stuff I did first. You know, I did case studies and went, what, you know, rather than just showing a portfolio and saying, this is the work that I've, you know, that we've done. We still have some of those things on our websites that are just like, this is the project, and they're a little bit like eye candy, but the other ones are, you know, this is what the goals were. This is, you know, who the client was. This is what we were trying to achieve. This is what the outcome was. And then you put a testimonial on it. You show, you know, you lay it out so it's nice. But you're really trying to sell, the type of client that you're working with, and B, you know, what the challenge was, and then how you solved it, and what the end result was. And I think if you can do that, you only need to pick like the best, you know, handful of projects. Like I started off with 4. I went, well, I've got, you know, 20 odd projects, but they're, you know, they're not that special. I picked the 4 best ones. And I pumped them up as much as I could. I talked to the clients. I got them to put testimonials, and I made sure the testimonials were on those case studies and all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, you use the testimonials in other places of your website too, but it means if someone comes to that case study, it sort of describes exactly the type of people you're working with and the type of problems you're trying to fix. So I think that's really important, doing the case studies. And, you know, of course, things like I said, content like blogging and those sorts of things don't hurt. As far as the niching sort of thing, like outwardly at the moment, I wouldn't say our website is geared towards that market. Purely we haven't had the time to go in and redo everything. And
story of every agency owner. They can't do their own website, but they can do all of it.
Yeah, that's it. I think, you know, the design and the layout of the website sort of still holds up okay. I mean, it still attracts the same type of, you know, client. But most of that stuff, like within that niche that I've said, most of that stuff, it's very few clients that we have and need. And so it kind of works okay that the agency site sits there and generates like these general sorts of inquiries, and we can afford to, I guess, lose them. You know, if someone rings up and they're interested in a service, and it's not something that I particularly want to be spending our time on, I can just sort of move them on to someone else, or their price point isn't right, that when we're not a good fit, it's really easy to let those people go. We'll only sort of take them on if all of the bits sort of fit together.
Okay, so after one subjective question of attracting high quality leads, here comes another subjective question. Now, you know, you've got the lead. Now, delivering value, quality work, client satisfaction, all these are very important when you are working at agency level, and more so important when you're working with clients who are like very upmarket in sense of, you know, the volume of money involved or even the work involved. So how do you ensure value proposition and associated client satisfaction while, you know, serving clients of your niche?
Sure. Well, I think you could be doing this at any level. And I think, you know, if you're charging, you know, like a lower rate or a higher rate, you really should start to do some of these things, and they will allow you to sort of start to make some steps up. But really what it is understanding that those metrics are the things that you're measuring, that they're not yours, right? They're actually the clients. And that's when you start to, I think that approach helps you start to quote higher. It's when you start to ask better questions of prospects. So someone comes to you and you ask them, you know, why it is they believe they need a website. A lot of people won't ask those questions. If someone says, oh, hi, you know, can you, you know, redo our leg, you know, our logo, and you start to challenge them and say, well, hang on, why are you redoing your logo now? Like what, you know, how long have you been in business for? 15 years. Well, maybe there's a bit of brand equity in there. The thing with that sort of stuff is most people will have answers for that. They'll have thought of this stuff first. But if you go into that mode where you're starting to ask these sorts of questions, people will sort of, their opinion of you will change because you're not just trying to land this sale. You'll also uncover stuff that's really important. So if someone says, we're getting, you know, if someone rings up and says, we want a logo, and you're like, that's fine. You know, we can do logos at this much and the project goes ahead, then you don't know what that metric is. You don't really know anything deeper than that. Whereas if you start to say, well, why do you need a logo? Oh, well, we're losing customers. Well, why is that? You know, well, they might say, oh, our logo's out, you know, outdated. And it's like, well, is that a problem? Yes, we're losing customers. How do you know you're losing customers because of this? And you start to undercover these, you know, these answers from them, and you start to use those things as your metrics. So in terms of a website, like it might be, you know, there's the really easy things that we go for, like, you know, conversion, and there's things like, you know, traffic, and there's things like load times. And there's all these things that we would put on them as, you know, designers and developers that we know are important. Mm-hmm. But it's getting the client to actually tell you those things and where it sort of hurts. And, you know, sometimes those things, that the real painful part for the business owner isn't like that, they're not getting traffic. It's that they're at home at night worrying about their business, crunching the numbers and doing all this sort of stuff, and they have no life. Like, there's more value in that than, you know, a few more people coming to your website. So if you can sort of solve those problems, but the first step, I guess, is asking better questions.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's why there isn't really, the metrics don't tend to change it at low end or high end. If you sort of realize that the thing that you're sort of being judged on isn't your own personal, you know, bar that you're trying to raise, it's the client's problem.
Okay. Now, other important aspect of agency positioning is, you know, the type of services you offer. Now, like when someone starts a new agency, they want to offer every service under the sun. Hey, you know, on social media, we'll do that. You want flyers, we'll do that. Guess what? We also do content marketing. We also do SEO, all that stuff. You know, I'm sure even you've gone through it, and now you've niched down a specific market. But now you, even though you've niched down to a specific market, what changes has it brought to services that you offer? Like, you still offer, like, I'll do everything under one brand, or you still say, like, I only do these things and I'll refer if you want this certain thing, which I actually don't do?
Yeah. So you hit the nail on the head. That's just the answer. That really is just the answer. And I 100% fell into the same trap. I started to work for myself and I'm like, I needed to do everything and I needed to work for anyone that I could. And then I started to work on some of those things. And I did say initially that I was trying to identify those people, and I kept the services really, really broad initially. I think that's the thing. Well, and, you know, if you look at niching, there's two ways. There's actually three ways to niche. I'm going off topic again. Sorry about that. But there's three ways to niche. Really, there's to niche on like a vertical. So, a industry type. Mm-hmm. So you might pick dentists, or you might pick property developers, or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
or there's on horizontal. So you obviously, you know, a type of skill. So you might just be an illustrator and that's all you do. All you do is illustration, or all you do is, you know, Java, right? Like there's, and people think, oh, all I do is WordPress, but that's really broad, you know, especially when you know that WordPress is 60% of CMSs and, you know, 20 or 30% of websites online are built by WordPress. That's not a niche, it's broad.
Yeah.
So you've got to, you know, bring that in a little bit. But I started wider than that, right? Like I'm saying I do SEO and I will do social and I'll do that sort of stuff. And it was getting rid of some of those, you know, services. I learned that pretty quickly. Look, you should, there's nothing wrong with any of the services. Like you can make great money out of just doing SEO. You can make great money out of just running discovery workshops.
We all do this actually when you start, you know, we try to catch every kind of a fish, like until a shark comes out and bites your hand. Oh man, I shouldn't be doing this.
And I know we all do it. And I think the main reason that we probably do that is we think that it's giving us more opportunity.
Yeah.
But really what it's doing is the opposite. It's actually watering down your services. And the way that I like to think of that is, you know, let's say you're a mechanic and you want to attract, you know, your business is just okay. You want to attract more people. Now you might think, well, what if I started to, you know, do car washes? Well, okay. You know, now you're a car wash and a mechanic. Well, what if you started to sell coffee, but gets to a point where it's like, I don't even know what you do. Now, the other way, if you started to niche and you went, you know what, our business isn't doing well. What if we just serviced one sort of vehicle? Like, let's just service like Volkswagens. You know, we'll just work on Volkswagens. That's all we do. Now, you'd think that the person that's adding coffee and car washes and stuff is going to attract more people. But really what that does is it clouds what it is that you do. Are you a coffee shop? Are you a car wash? Are you a mechanic? Whereas now anyone with a Volkswagen that wants to get their car serviced, they're going to find that sort of single person. So you end up getting more work.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I did the same thing. Started off with lots of services, pulled them back. And I guess the tough thing for us is we're still broad, as in we do, I guess we'd say we're end to end, as in we'll have a strategy conversation, work out, help people with their positioning and their branding, you know, do that visual identity, do some graphic design and build website. That's a lot of stuff. But it's really important for us to then cap those things and say, look, we can help you with creative for your social, mm-hmm. but we're not going to do, you know, content creation. We're not going to do, you know, social media management. We're not going to do SEO. So even though what we do is fairly like end to end, I think that's why we've got a vertical niche that seems to work, because those people, even within the website and that sort of stuff, there's the same sorts of things that they need to see and that need to be done. So we're sort of repeating ourselves. And most of the creative stuff, that's where all the variation comes through. Oh, the sun is coming in on me. That's terrible.
Maybe you want to close the window.
There we go. That's a bit better.
So just like, you know, we have a journey for our services, like they get smaller and smaller as we grow older, yep. in terms of or getting wiser with our agency stuff. Same goes with pricing. Like we all start with low, you know, pricing because we don't know what the pricing is for certain things. Yep. Gradually you get more experience, you discover things. Okay, this should be priced this. So how has your journey in terms of pricing your work from the time you started your agency to now?
Yeah, it's changed a couple of times. I don't think I was ever, you know, I don't think I ever went in with the, what I thought was cheap. But I feel like I've, you know, with transitioning from, you know, just working from home and, you know, moving into an office and sort of trying to build things up, I've still combated the same sorts of problems that, you know, someone that might be doing, you know, $500 logos, that it's still trying to work out how to get past those points. I've had things in my head that are mental barriers. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the main thing is to do some sort of reading. You know, if you can read and actually learn about pricing strategies, you know, there's things like Win Without Pitching by Blair Enns, which are, you know, a great book, but they're just these sorts of ideas around, you know, again, asking better questions, to sort of uncover bigger problems. And if you can uncover these bigger problems, then that will allow you to price more. The other thing that I've noticed is that I truly believe in, and a concept that got brought, you know, to my attention at one time, and it just blew my mind, was this idea that generally what we do as people is we price for our own wallet. And that concept means that we have our own expectations around what things cost. And so, you know, if I use an example of a pair of shoes, like I might only spend $150 on a pair of shoes. Now, let's just use that as a base now, $150. There are going to be people in the world that's going to be really expensive, and that's going to be, you know, an expensive pair of shoes. And there will be people in the world that would spend, you know, $1,000 on a nice pair of Italian leather shoes. And that's just their baseline. That's their basic, you know, shoe. So what person is right? Neither of them are, you know, right or wrong. It's just sort of understanding that what you do is you price. You have these mental images in your head of what value is and how much something is worth. And so often we get stuck. We get stuck with the pricing that we already have. So you might.
So in your agency life, a client who is under, you know, processing and probably become your prospective clients in future, and he gives an argument, your price is too high. How do you counter that argument with that client, or do you even counter it and say bye bye?
I'll probably say, you know, I guess the thing is you can just say, you, maybe you're right. You know, I'm not going to argue that. So that's really important to not argue and say, oh, no, it's not, or try and defend that. They probably say, look, maybe that is, or you ask them compared to what. But again, going back to the big questions, the important questions, if you uncover that sort of stuff and you start to say, well, what problems are you having? Like, you know, someone comes to you and they want a website. Why do you want a website? And you start to work out what these problems are. And you can say, well, you know, you don't ask for a budget, but you can say, well, what is this worth to solve this problem? Like, you know, is this a, you know, a $50,000 problem that you're having, you know? So if you can ask some better questions, look, often when you talk about value-based pricing, often people think that what you need to do is say to something like, get these physical, you know, dollar figures down. So you say to someone, how much is your service worth? Oh, it's worth $5,000. Oh, so if we can help you generate 10 more customers, that's worth $50,000. Yes, it is. But that's not actually it. There's things that we value inside of ourselves that are worth a lot to get fixed, and a lot of problems, and they don't actually have a number attached to them. Like I said earlier, like keeping you up at night worrying or not spending time with your family, you know, CEOs have those problems, and they want them fixed, you know? So I don't know, I've kind of gone a little bit around in circles, but
how do you arrive at your specific prices for your services? Like, do you figure out the value pricing, or do you have like set, you know, minimum entry level for certain type of services? Like, how do you arrive at that magic figure? Because most of people don't do any, you know, mathematics or any analytics or anything of that sort. It's just like, my competitor is charging this, so I'm going to charge this.
Yeah. I guess so I'm a little bit in the middle with how I've developed the pricing. I'm not an analytical person. I need help with those sorts of things. But again, I think that value is a personal thing. And that's why I said it doesn't always need to be tied to, you know, we're going to help you, we're going to homes. You know, if someone's selling 500 homes and the blocks of land are $250,000 each, well, you can start to do the maths on that. And so it's like, well, if we help you sell these homes quicker, or, you know, we help you sell more of these homes, you know, or blocks of land, you know, what's that problem worth to you? Now, I guess the thing, that there are two ways to do that with your pricing and to be able to answer these questions. I think one is to sort of know what your base is. I'm not the sort of person that would like to go and track my hours. We don't do any of that at the office. It's not what I got into business for. I've done that for other people. I don't enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with tracking your hours. But if you go like, it's always a good thing to do initially to work out where you should be pricing, right? And then that always needs to be, if you've got a good understanding that it takes you, you know, say $5,000 worth of energy, I'd rather think of it as energy rather than time, because I think, you know, say a website or a logo, it's more important than the actual time you spend in front of the computer going like this. There's all this other energy that and effort that's required in it. So $5,000 worth of energy might be 10 hours. It doesn't really matter. But if you know what that value point for you is, say it's $5,000 for a basic website or whatever, just to make the maths easy, then you use that as your base. And then when you start to talk to someone, if you can start to see that the problem is bigger than that, then you start to throw out, you know, numbers for $10,000 or $15,000, mm-hmm. knowing that if they push back, you know, if their price is under the $5,000, well, you can't work together. But really, like I said before, you're trying to have these conversations where you can pull something a bit more meaningful from the client.
Yeah, because pricing is complex. It has always been. So that's why we're always hunting, hey, what's my competitor charging? Maybe I need to figure out.
Yeah, or I think if you're starting to ask those things, like I always see this thing, if you're starting to worry about what your neighbor's charging, or you know what your competitors are charging, then chances are you know inside that you're probably not charging enough.
Exactly.
It's really hard. I've had some blocks and barriers where I've had to, in that pricing my own wallet, where I had ideas of what a logo was worth when someone would come to me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get past that mark until I heard that idea around pricing your own wallet. And once I did that, I realized that what I was doing was pricing myself every time someone rang up. And so that's that whole concept when someone rings up, it's to try and price the client and not the project. So it's not about how many hours you're doing or how much work it is. It's who is this person? How important is the problem to them? How big is the problem? And how much value is in there? How much money would they willingly give you to solve it?
You know, a logo can have an estimate that can vary from 2 zeros to 5 zeros. Now it depends on, you know, what is the company? And that's where value, you know, pricing comes into picture. Logo can be as cheap as $50 and it can be as big as $50,000. It depends like who you are designing the logo for, right?
And well, the Pepsi logo was $1 million and that was a few years ago. That was $1 million. $1 million for a logo.
Yeah.
And people didn't like it.
Yeah, but after a while it looks good because in the end they got a drink, they don't really care. Because Pepsi is like it's a brand in altogether different league. So you know, scaling back, someone listening to this and feeling stuck in similar type of low-paying leads and clients, what few things would you advise to start the rejuvenation process to get better clients?
Well, if you're having those sort of problems with yourself and you know that, you know, you're starting to think that, oh, there's sun. I picked the worst day to do this.
You only got enough space now. You can't
I'm going to be on the wall in a minute. I think the easiest way to sort of start to change pricing is just to do it incrementally. Mm-hmm. It can be really hard and really daunting to, you know, 10x your price and sort of say, oh, now I'm going to charge, you know, put a zero at the end. If you can do that, go for it. Like if you can double your pricing, if you've got enough confidence to do that, generally, if you're going to do a big jump like that, that's when you need to start to work on some of those things like your messaging, how you promote your services. So if you start doing those things like adding case studies and showing that you can produce bigger things and better things and solve better problems, then the leads you'll get will start to be better. And you can make these jumps, you know, larger jumps easier. But a really simple way to sort of start to do that is just go like think of 10% or 20%. If you take the amount of money you earned for the year and say it was $100,000 and you've got $20,000 is 20%. If I was to give you that now, you'd take it. You'd be happy to have that $20,000, right? So everyone sort of talks about making these giant leaps and, you know, trying to make these massive changes.
Double your pricing. But,
yeah, double your pricing or 10 times your pricing. If you can put it up by 10% or 20% and just do it incrementally, it'll make a big difference over the end of a year. You can do that to existing clients too. You can just start to put your pricing up by 10% and, you know, until you get some pushback, like someone says, why is this much? And you can have a conversation around it. You'll know when Like if you're not losing, like if you're winning all of your projects, right? Like people ring up and you give them, you know, a cost and you're winning them all, then you're not charging enough. You should be losing projects. You should be, you know, people should be turning away. And if people never go like, when you mention a price, like someone should all, there should always be, you know, 1 in 10 calls minimum. Someone should go, oh, that's expensive. And, you know, I think everyone fears that they don't want to be seen as expensive, but no one wants to be cheap. Yeah. So there's only one way to not be cheap, and that's to start to, you know, charge what you're worth, you know.
And this was like for pricing, like what about the, you know, the visibility or the branding of the agency? Like someone who feels really stuck, you know, starting a new brand with a fresh perspective, is that recommended?
Yeah, look, there's probably ways of doing that. It does depend on, I don't think there's a, and I would say this to, you know, help people with branding. If someone else come to me to get help with their brand, that's a big conversation to have. Mm-hmm. And there's reasons to rebrand and there's reasons not to be to rebrand. If it's because you're bored or, you know, you think that you're, you know, you're sick of the colors or any of those sorts of things, they're bad ideas. Even if you're trying to attract better clients, maybe that's not enough. You know, there's probably things you can do within your current brand to build it up. The main reason I would say you're rebranding is if you're telling a bigger part of the story or you're changing the sort of service that you're doing. We're sort of toying with at the moment, you know, with do we do a sort of sub-brand that's tied to Elk Creative, not a whole separate business, but a sub-brand that really is the focus for this real estate, you know, land development client, or do we just make that our, you know, front and center niche? So that's the thing that we're sort of grappling with at the moment. But and that's because there's this change in the market that we're sort of, you know, heading towards. But I wouldn't recommend people do that just to get better clients, unless there's, you know, they've been trading as, you know, a sole trader or something like that, and they're just presenting themselves as a single entity. Now, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, Corey Dodd, webdesign.com. There's nothing wrong with just trading as your name. The thing with that is to do that, though, you probably need to present yourself differently than an agency would. An agency sort of can fall back on the fact that there's a few people,
yeah,
and that the expertise is spread out across a few people.
Yep.
So, you know, you can have an SEO person over here and get good results. You don't have to be all of those things. So when you're a single person, I think it's really important to sort of focus on one sort of skill set, and be a real sort of hero and real sort of industry leader in that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's about producing content, and it's got to be focused towards yourself rather than, you know, there's no point faking that you're a team and that sort of stuff.
That's another dilemma, like focusing on personal brand name or, you know, having a generic brand name. Like a lot of people get confused and, you know, they don't even start a brand name because they're not sure whether I should use my name or find some fancy name in, you know, that's for which the .com is available and then get started. Because most of website agency names don't make sense, actually, if you see them.
No, that's right. I don't know why Elk Creative. There is a story behind it, but it's not very good.
Okay, let's shift gears and talk about your toolbox. So which are your current 5 favorite tools that power your online business?
Well, WordPress is still definitely the number one stuff to go to for web. I don't think we'll ever be moving from that. Unless something changes, but there's no, you know, we sort of try and look at other things, and you know, the few things have come up on the radar recently, but there's certainly no reason to.
Few CMS, there's Kirby CMS, there's few others who have appeared, and a lot of people are using it, but then WordPress is still WordPress.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. So probably like XD is our go-to for web design.
Mm-hmm.
And look, it's probably just the basic, people don't like it, but it's Adobe Suite. We sort of sit there and in, you know, InDesign and Illustrator, Photoshop and XD are like the things that we sit in day to day, and they're sort of always running. There's no special tool or anything that we use. It's the same stuff that everyone else does. I sort of, you know, try not to get swept up in all these lifetime deals and all these sorts of things. I've done that before, and you just add these things to your stack, and you know, you use like 5% of them.
Sometimes even not even 5%.
Not even, no. Not, they're a good deal, that, but they're a good deal that just collects dust. So yeah, we just stick to the to sort of the basic sort of stuff. You know, I'm a big sort of believer in hand sketching. You know, I'll even draw wireframe mockups and stuff like that by hand. Just quick and easy to do. You know, logo ideas are sort of done on a sketch pad and so, yeah.
Which is a recommended web hosting service? Like, do you host client websites as well, or do you send them somewhere else?
Yeah, so we use a couple of hosting services. Where we've started to move stuff to Cloudways, and a lot of people have moved to them as well. It's been fine. So we were using Flywheel, mm-hmm. and we still have an account with them for some stuff. It just depends on the client. As far as hosting, yeah, we only host websites for clients that we've built the website for, mm-hmm. And they're on a care plan. Mm-hmm. With us, care plans are mandatory, so that's another sort of barrier of entry. So if someone wants to do a project with us, we explain that that's, you know, a part of our how it works. And if they don't want to do that, they want to host the website themselves and they want to sort of do all that own stuff, that's fine. They probably just need to work with someone else. So yeah, that's what we do. That's does that answer the question? They're the two hosting companies that we and tend to use.
Your recommended page builder? Like, do you use any page builder for building websites?
No, old school. What, old school?
Where you been living?
Yep. So it's sort of developed our own sort of base theme.
Probably will directly jump to Gutenberg as and when it becomes like a page.
Yeah, well, that's the way that we're working at the moment. So we're just sort of doing, you know, we use ACF, you know, Advanced Custom Fields on on every single website. I don't think there's been a website for, you know, years that haven't. That's like a default.
Any recommend?
And once that,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, once they started to, you know, Gutenberg came out and ACF did ACF blocks. Yeah. We jumped on that, and that's sort of how we work now. So we're sort of, you know, header and footer and things like that are part of the theme. Uh-huh. And then everything else, all the content layout is just done with custom ACF blocks. So we're you know, designing them and then developing, you know, adding them in. And so the client, I just like the process. I know some people don't like Gutenberg, and that's okay. But for me, it sort of gives the clients that flexibility, and even us, it gives us that flexibility of changing the layout, but without sort of mucking around with design.
Now, you just mentioned ACF. I was having a conversation with someone last weekend. That person mentioned, do you know ACF is made and maintained by just one person? And
I said, yeah, Elliot Condon. Yeah.
Are you risking your business? I said, I don't use ACF, but let other people say who use ACF.
Yeah, well... Who knows?
But it's a solid tool. It's been a solid ever since it came to the limelight, and it's like very cheap. And I get always surprised by the pricing he has done for that tool. So
yeah, yep. I know. I'm surprised when anything doesn't have a recurring sort of price to it, and a single payment. Then you think, wow, that's a long commitment for a business to sort of you know, make. Yeah.
Okay, so any recommended email marketing service if you are into email stuff?
No, we pass that stuff off. That's I handle that to someone else. So when we get services like that are things that we don't do, we don't do that stuff. I'm not someone that really like doing white label work, mm-hmm. and so I don't tend to do it with other people. So if there's a service that we don't do, we just refer clients on direct to other people that we know who do those things. Mm-hmm. I think that's a benefit in doing that too, because you build up relationship with another supplier. So, you know, there's probably, there's two or three go-tos that we have for things like content and a couple of photographers that we use and those sorts of things. So yeah, the email marketing and those sorts of things, it's okay. not for us. And
any upcoming tool or service that has caught your attention, other than your lifetime deals haul?
No, I don't think so. No, I should have come prepared with some stuff, but I'm just drawing a blank. No, I just sort of go to the sort of standard stuff. I mean, I've been playing a lot with Procreate on the iPad in my free time, and I think that's that's coming a long way. But yeah, that's more for fun than real work.
I think today is Apple event today, I guess. They're launching new iPhones. It's just you mentioned iPad and it's stuck in my head. They're launching new iPhones and probably something with Apple Watch. I'm not too sure, but yes, iPhone definitely. Yeah. Okay, cool. So before we wrap this episode, where can people find you and what can you help people with?
Well, obviously, people can find me at our website, which is www.elkcreative. People can email me. Anyone can sort of get in contact with me. Just email Corey at Elk Creative. There's a Facebook group and there's a Facebook page. I don't have a Facebook group for Elk Creative. And people can sort of find me on Twitter. They can sort of email me or ask me questions about anything. Within the community, like what I try and help people with is to, you know, help people price themselves a little bit better and charge more. I've sort of helped a few people change that a lot for themselves, which has been good. So yeah, but client work, you know, I've already sort of talked about my niche, and I don't know if they'll be listening. I don't know if you've got property developers that are listening.
If you've got a big chunk of land and you want to build houses on it and you need web presence, then this is the best person, right?
That's it.
Okay, man. It was amazing talking to you.
Beautiful. It was great. Thanks for your time.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.